for those of you who were concerned, I will not, I can't guarantee you what I'll say this year, because I have no idea what I'm going to say from day to day, from week to week, but I will say one thing. I will try not to say, I don't think I'll say what I said last year, unless I suffer from a terrible senior moment and have no idea what I said last year. But
how'd you say last year?
I don't know. No, I have notes. I will not be repeating again, unless there's another time. Unless there's a whole different approach to the same kind of topic. But I will not be teaching what I taught last year. I will not be teaching what I taught 3 years ago. I've been prohibited from teaching what's in either of my books, correct?
Okay.
So, I don't know. I have no idea. I have no idea. I'm very excited to find out what I'm going to say, which is really the reason that I came. What we are going to try to do is to learn Parsha Shavua. We'll stick to the Parsha. Today, through technical difficulties, which I'm not responsible for. Sometimes I am. I actually came on time. I came early. I could have gone to my mother for breakfast, but I didn't. I came here to get photocopies on time, and the photocopy machines aren't broken. So therefore, those of you who don't have a Tanakh, I would suggest taking one. There's a couple more on the table. There's more in the library. Have a Tanakh in front of you. This will make it somewhat easier. If anyone afterwards does want the sources, then you can email me and I'll send you a Word file with the sources if this will make you happy. As far as what we're going to try to do, we're going to try to understand the Chumash, but we're going to be using a lot of Midrashim. When necessary, we'll be using commentaries on the Midrashim. Those of you who don't have a lot of experience with Midrash, the people who dealt with Midrash more than anyone else were really the Hasidic writers. They're the ones who really opened it up. The armor seats. Not exclusively, but again, why this is not for today and not for us to discuss. But they really, more than anyone else, entered into the world of Midrash, where they try to understand the theological understandings behind the text, more so than exactly what does the text say. Sometimes the things that they tell us will be astounding, and sometimes the things will intuitively will feel as correct, but we will be using a lot of Midrash during the year. We are going to start today with Parshat Noah. Yeah? It would be, by the way, the class would be much easier, much better if we did the week later than I had next week to prepare, although Rabbi Soloveitchik used to do that. Everyone would get upset. But what he would teach on Tuesdays, and he would give a little thing on the parsha, but always the last parsha, and then people couldn't steal it. So, or they had to be prepared enough to steal it for next year, okay? Which was a source of great deal of frustration for many rabbis who actually then had to learn on their own. Today, with the internet, they don't have to learn on their own; they can just steal other people's writing. Anyway, let us continue. Today's class, and I don't want to overly embarrass her, but today's class really is dedicated to my parents for their 50th wedding anniversary, and which is this week. And not everything here is about them. One of the flood and all. Corruption, moral decay. But there is at least one element that that will hopefully be appropriate. And I am terribly sick, and I should be in bed.
Don't cough
on me. No, don't cough on me, that's all. Everyone moves away now.
No encroachment now.
No encroachment, thank you. Okay. What was the name of Noah's wife? Mrs. Noah. No, okay, Naamah. Naamah to the play. Yeah. Which play?
You can't see the play.
Okay. Naamah. How do we know that Naamah was Noah's wife? We will see in a moment. Good morning.
Yeah.
We were sheetless this morning. Look at the beginning of Parshat Noah. Noah's wife is actually not mentioned by name over here whatsoever. Instead, we find the following. Perek Vav Pasuk Tet. Ela told that Noah, these are the generations of Noah. Noah ish tzadik. Noah is a righteous man. Tamim haya b'tarotav. Or perhaps it should be Noah ish tzadik tamim. No, but in terms of the trap, it's Noah ish tzadik tamim haya b'tarotav. He was perfect in his generation. Et elokim etalich Noah. Again, no word about the woman behind the man. Vayolad Noach shlosha banim, which is a wonderful trick. How did he do this on his own? This is what it says. Noach has three sons. Shem, Cham,
v'Yafet. That's why it was in Rovi.
In the old days, that's the way they did it.
No. In the rendition of Rovi the Rov, the wife doesn't appear.
Maybe.
Yeah. Okay.
Correct. This doesn't surprise us, right? V'tishechei ta'aretz and so on. Vayolad kimat ta'aretz. Things are not going well. We will have destruction, biblical proportions. Vayomer Hashem and Vayomer Elokim Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayomer Elokim Noach Ketz Kol Basar Balafanai Ki Malah Haaretz Hamas Mipneihem. The word Hamas is something which the various commentators will have to deal with. What exactly is the problem? Hamas has a connotation of violence to it. And what everyone's thinking, how nice that a terrorist organization decided to name themselves. And God said, therefore, time to wipe it out. Make for yourself a boda, selecha teva, and so on. After the various descriptions, God says, I will bring this Mabul and Pasukut Zion. Pasukut Chet, Vahakimoti et Riti Itach, I will make a covenant with you. Uvata el teva, you will come to the ark. Ata ubanecha, you and your children, you and your sons. Veishtecha, unishevanecha itach. And your wives, and your sons' wives. Now you will.
Ishtaka is your wife.
Your wife, sorry. And your sons, sorry. And your sons' wives. Now, when you read this pasuk, something strikes you. That the way the division takes place here is a little strange. It should have been you and your wife, and then your sons and their wives. And that's not what it says. What does Rashi conclude from that? Hanashim, right? There was machitza in the ark. Hanashim levad, mikan shenesru b'tashmish hamita. And here we know is that they had to conduct themselves in a celibate fashion on the ark. Okay, this is here, but here Noah's wife is mentioned. As far as the tradition that her name is Na'ama, we need to go back a little bit. In Perek Dalet, we find the following situation. Perek Dalet Pasuk Yutet. Vayikach lo Lemech Shtei Nashim. Lemech took two wives. Shem Ha'echat Ada. One woman's name was Ada. Shem Ha'shenit Sila. And one name was Sila. V'telet Ada et Yaval hu haya avi Yoshev Ohamum. And Ada had a child named Yaval, and he was somebody who sat in tents and had luck. Perek Dalet, chapter 4, verse 21 now. Dalet Kafalet. B'shem Achiv Yuval, and his brother's name was Yuval, Huya Avit Kol Tafes Kinor V'Ugav. And he was somebody who began the music industry. V'tzila Gamhi Yelda et Tuval Kain. Lotesh Kol Choresh Nechoshet Uvarzel. And he's somebody who becomes a smith. He begins to work with metal and to make various utensils. Va'achot Tuvalkayin Na'ama. And Tuvalkayin had a sister, and her name was Na'ama. Rashi over here writes, if you're looking for this, Na'ama He ishto shel Noah. Nahama is the wife of Noah. So everyone except for with Charlotte. Would agree to, so everyone except for Charlotte. What was the name of Naaman's father?
Lemuel.
Now what was the name of Noah's father? This is good because we don't have a clue, right? And you think yourself, I should know this.
Almost
Lemuel. How do you know that?
It says right here.
It says right there. Okay, is this the same Lemuel? Is it the same Lemuel? Maybe, no? No, it's not the same Lemuel. How do I know? No. No, it's not generations afterward. It's Noah's wife. One second. You can't say that. Right? You understand why you can't say that? What's really going on over here, and this... What's really going on over here, and this is the starting point to understand the whole topic today. When, look, you can't take the verse totally out of context. You can't take any of these verses. You want to look at the name of Noah's father, and I'll move again for a second.
But it's
Kavchet.
What's
the Kavchet
in
Hay? Hey Kavchet. Wait. Hey Kavchet. Lechi Lemech 82 Shana Vayolid Ben Vayikra et Shmo Noach. So, if we go through Perek Dalet and go through Perek Hay, what you'll find out, and by the way, the reason we don't know this is because the rest of Bereshit is so interesting and so difficult that no one ever gets to the end of Bereshit. In order to really look at it seriously. On top of that, whenever you get to these, what some people like to call laundry lists, and he begat he, and he begat him, and him, and so you just skip it, or if you don't skip it, you're really good, and you read it, but don't pay attention, right? Which is better than skipping it, right? So if we go back to the beginning of Dalet starts off with Cain and Hevel. Okay, that doesn't work out all that well. At the end of the Cain and Hevel story, we have Pasuk Perek Dalet Pasuk Tet Zayin, where Kayin leaves. Vayetze Kayin lefnei Hashem. Vayeshev Eretz Nod Kidmat Eden. Kayin leaves and he goes. Vayede Kayin et Ishto. Vatahar Vatelet et Chanoch. Vayehi Bone Ir Vekrashem Ha'ir Kishem Beno Chanoch. So he has a son. His son name is Chanoch, and he builds a city, and the city is named after him. This is the first city which is built. This is the first attempt at to create an urban center. Now, if you note the name Chanoch is here, and the name Chanoch is also in Perek Hay. It's a different Chanoch. If you go through Perek Dalet and Perek Hay, you will find all kinds of names that are repeated between the two lists, but they are not the same list. They have nothing to do with one another, at least in terms of genealogy. In terms of substance, they may have a lot to do with one another, but that's, again, what we need to understand. We get from Chanoch to Paras Pasuk Yitched, we lay the Chanoch at Irad, the Irad Yalad et Mechuyel, Mechuyel Yalad et Mutushael, which is very similar to another name that we'll see in the next, right? Mutushael Yalad et Lemech, which is now we realize there's more than one Lemech as well. Ve'ikach v'lemech shtei nashim, shem achat adah v'shem ashnit sila. He took two wives. Now that itself strikes us somewhat, but before we come back to Lemech and his wives, what we realize over here, we are talking about the genealogy of who? Of Cain. This is the story of Cain. All the way through Perek Dalet, it's a story of Cain. On the other hand, when you start Perek Hay, you find that we are dealing with a different genealogy. Perek Hay starts all over again. Zeh Sefer Toldot Adam, B'yom Bero Elokim Adam, B'dmut Elokim Asato. We're starting to tell the story all over again from the first day. Zachar Nekev Abraham, God created man, male and female. And it goes through from Adam, and then from Adam it goes to Shet. From Shet it goes through Enosh, and so on. And then if you follow this all the way through, you will find that we are now dealing with the genealogy, and you have another Chanoch, coming to Shelah. If you follow all the way through, you will now realize that the Lemech that Noah comes from is a descendant of Shet. So we have two different lines, two different lemechs. Although it's, again, it's interesting. What's the significance of it? We have no idea. It's interesting that Noah's father's name is Lamech, and according to Rashi and Chazal, his wife's father's name is Lamech as well. Again, does that mean anything? I don't think any of us would get all that excited about that, per se, but one can also get confused and think that, that Noah married his sister, and so no way can anybody say such a thing, because it's very simply stated. Huh? I'm okay.
When did they go wrong?
No, next week they won't come back. It's okay. there is another chair over here.
Yeah, there's one here.
Only
this
one there.
Okay, did this
mean... Ah, absolutely. Good, mm-hmm. Good. Absolutely. Absolutely. Although it is interesting, if we start at the beginning of Perek Hey, if you go back a little bit, again, we don't necessarily accept these divisions. You go the end of Perek Daled, there is one pasuk which is quite interesting, and that's really the shift between the end of the Kain story, the beginning of the Shait story, pasuk Kaf Daled, Ki Shevatayim Yukam Kain VeLemech Shivim VeShiva. Something there happened again. If you know the Midrashim, Lemech accidentally killed Kayin, which is the end of the Kayin story, right? We understand that, because he's dead. The poetic justice is quite interesting in what is the status of Lemech, who is a murderer of a murderer, unless it's accidentally. So is getting rid of a murderer something which is very good, or is getting rid of a murderer something which is not very good, because now you've become a murderer? This is part of the tension that exists over here at the end of the story, but now Kayin is dead, and Lemech has taken the place of Kayin. Now he's the one with blood on his hands, right? He is genealogically the continuation of Cain, and in terms of his behavior, he is the continuation of Cain, right? Yes?
But it was supposed to be accidental.
So again, he is the genealogical continuation of Cain, but now by killing Cain, which could, again, is accidental, he now has blood on his hands. See, it's interesting. What's the punishment when you kill somebody by accident? You go into galut, right? You go wander. What was the punishment of Cain? It shouldn't have been... Meaning, it's very interesting, which is why in Chazal, who were bothered by that. Again, you could now tell me that the whole approach is false. Where is Chazal coming from? They're saying, I know, if I open up the Chumash, I open up the Shulchan Aruch, I open up the Gemara, that if somebody kills by accident, they go into galut. Now, that bothers me. Why is Cain going to galut to be killed? Maybe he didn't kill on purpose. They go into, but that's the idea of galut. They go into your miklat. You have to leave your home. So therefore, if Cain now is forced to wander and leave his home, so therefore it must be that Cain really didn't kill on purpose. Now, again, I don't want to go...
Very possible, because
he didn't know. He didn't know.
How did he know what
exactly,
that was?
Exactly, 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 exactly. I didn't realize that if I shoot him in the head, then he would be dead. And there is... No, I'm saying there is an approach of Chazal that identifies that and says, he didn't realize that if you do this, he would really die. Maybe he just thought he was giving him a beating. Okay, so I'm just trying to show how Lemech is related to Cain, not just in terms of a descendant, but also on a certain level in terms of behavior. That is the end of the Cain story. The beginning of the new story is the next pasuk, Perek Dalet Pasuk Kafei. Vayeda Adam Od et Ishto Ketelet Ben Vatikrat Shmo Shet Hishatli Elokim Zera Acher Tachat Hevil Ki Harago Kain. What is Shet? Shet is the replacement of Hevel. Okay? So again, this becomes very clear when you read those two psukim one after the other. Kain, Lemech is the continuation of Kain, and Shet now becomes the replacement of Hevel. And then we have our two lines continuing, and there are certain parallels between those two lines. Why this is, is the more interesting question. To note it, it's obvious. But as we continue, it becomes more and more obvious and becomes some issues become more and more troubling. But let's go back to Lamech. What did Lamech do before anyone else ever did? Lamech did something that no one else ever had done.
He had two wives.
Okay, is this a good thing or a bad thing? Am I asking the wrong group?
Well, he can have more children as a result.
So let's read Rashi, the thinking of Lamech, or what the concept was. We're back now in Perek Dalid, where it says Pasuk Yudtet 4:19, where it says Vayikach lo Lamech shtei nashim. Let's look at Rashi. Shtei nashim, kach hayar darkan shel dor hamabul. This was the behavior of the generation of the Mabul. By the way, that does not sound like a very good thing, right? It does not sound like a positive analysis of it. Which means Rashi is saying, by the way, according to Rashi, why did the Mabul come? Rashi, in the beginning of our parsha, the beginning of Noah, why did the Mabul come? Rashi says because of Gezel, because of stealing. But Rashi says to tell you how bad stealing is, because they had many, many sins, but the Gzardin was decided because of Gezel. That means according to Rashi, they were guilty of all kinds of things. Here you have Rashi identifying one of those things. Again, back on that pasuk where it says, you don't have to turn, but to Malay Haaretz Hamas, Rashi reads Gezel. Even though Rashi over here will identify Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayot, and all kinds of other choice sins, Rashi now is telling us that one of the things, one of the aspects of corruption, again, I'm reading into Rashi, but one, because he says, this is the behavior generation of the Mabul. So Lemach is the one we're being told did this, but if you look carefully in the Chumash, you would find other people that did it. No? Okay, but hold on, because we don't know exactly what they did yet. We're being told this is the behavior of the Dor HaMabul. What was it? Achat lepirya v'ribya. One wife to have children for procreation. Achat letashmish. And one... What?
One to have fun with.
And one to have fun with. Thank you. I was wondering how I was going to translate that. Now, is this a good thing or is this a bad thing? My first association with this would be the kind of behavior which perhaps we see at times today as well, which is behavior which is identified by Chazal also, where somebody when they're young has a spouse, starts a family, when the man has his midlife crisis. He's shocked to find, he's 50 years old. I can't believe my wife is 50 years old. What am I doing with a 50-year-old wife? This is ridiculous. And therefore, he moves on from his middle-aged wife and goes on to a young wife, which means he has one, which means when I look at the total, I see one wife which is there for procreation, for the family. And by the way, if I want to be a little bit crueler, I can say for the fulfillment of the male's narcissistic need in order to create people in his own image, right? You agree, okay? and then there is this other wife
the
in order to
the trophy wife.
So, are you okay? Do you want chairs? Do you? There's another chair. There's more room here. I'm not gonna sit. Down. Hold on, slow down. I'll get there. So as I said, my first association with this, when I see this division in this way, which is not what it says over here. I mean, you'll realize it's not what it says over here. We said this is my first association, that this kind of division is something which really is morally corrupt, because you leave this wife of your youth, and this is something which Chazal identify, which the Torah, which the Navi uses a number of times as a metaphor, and it uses it as a very powerful metaphor. For example, in Sefer Yeshayahu, Perek Nun Dalei Pasuk Vav, it says, "Ki keisha azuva v'atzuvat ruach karacha Hashem ve'eshet ne'urim ki tama'es amar elokayach." Basically, where God uses this metaphor of somebody who has forsaken the wife of the youth. I'll read it in English. "For the Lord has called you as a woman forsaken, grieved in spirit, but a wife in the youth, can she be rejected, says your God." Meaning that this idea of rejecting the wife of your youth, this one that you started to build your family with, the Navi does not think that this is a wonderful thing.
Later,
I agreed. I said that it's not exactly this. I said this is the first association. Or in Sefer Melachai, where it says, Perek Bet Pasuk Yudalid, "V'amartim alma, aki Hashem he'id b'necha uvein eshet nu'urecha, asher ta bagadata ba, v'hi chavertecha, v'eshet v'itecha." And you say, why is this so? Because the Lord has been your witness between you and the wife of your youth, to whom you have been faithless, yet she is your companion and the wife of your covenant. And this is where Chazal come and they say that Amar Rabbi Lezer, kol ha-megaresh et ishto rishona, afilu mizbeach marid alav d'maot, which is that even the altar will shed tears. And it goes on and quotes the pasuk in Malachi. And then it goes on, two lines later, Amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachman, v'kol yesh tmura, anything can be replaced, chutz me'esh ne'urim, except the spouse of one's youth. She'anemar v'esh ne'urim kitamayis, going on to use that metaphor which was used in Yeshayahu. So the Gemara brings both of these sources together, and it really does, you know, reject that type of a value system. So again, let's not be naive and let's not be overly harsh in another direction. Sometimes marriages don't work. That's not what we're talking about. It's talking about people building something together, and then and I hope no one's insulted that I'm attacking the male midlife crisis here, where it says, and which is not always the case. Okay, let's be honest about that as well. But the male midlife crisis, where he just cannot begin to see himself with the woman who's really the same age as he is, and therefore goes looking for this, as you described before, trophy wife. This is something which the Navi absolutely attacks. This is something which the Gemara, the Midrashim, absolutely attack. Okay, but this was the only thing I was going to say about my parents' anniversary. Spending 50 years together and being with the same people that in shul on Shabbos, somebody says, what age you got? You must have been around 12 or so when you got married. But for people to stay together for 50 years is really something which is an incredible thing. As I said, that was my first thought when I saw this. But I want to ask you a different question. If there are two wives over here, and one is described as the wife for procreation, the other is described as this wife for, fun? Which is the real wife?
The wife of children, because that's a posterity. Mm-hmm. That's the continuation of your genetic...
Do you all agree? Pool. Do you all agree? This is that's the real wife? Or
real?
Yeah, but it's interesting. They answered. They just answered. This is the real... Which is...
What do you mean, which is the real one?
Meaning...
In the long run, the one you have children with is more significant, but I guess you have to look at the particular time in a man's life to see who the significant other is.
See, if...
Rachel and Leah... Leah gave birth first, and she had many children.
No, but we're talking about another period. There we didn't have that distinction between the two types of women.
Even though if Leah's having children and Rachel isn't, then there is an echo of this, and you see this, and you do see this in various places, including you can talk about Sarah and Hagar, and you can talk about Hannah and
Penina
as well. So you can look at this kind of relationship in various places, although normally that is the result of infertility, but that's not the plan that you start moving dreams. This is unique. Tell me one other person you can remember right now in Chumash, it says he went down and he married two people. I can tell you one other person. Esav. right? Asaph, it says he went to marry two people. Which means all the other ones I just now mentioned, you don't see that he said that writes, okay, let's start a family. I'd like to marry Sarah and Leah. No, that's not what happens. That's not what happens in the other cases. All of them are involving intrigue. And by the way, if you really think about it, the intrigue involved in Avraham having these two different wives ultimately produces a Yishmael for us who has been a thorn in our side. Ultimately, I'm not going to get into Esav because it's a separate problem, but Esav is the one whose behavior is mimicking the Lemech behavior. And that itself becomes very interesting, that is Lemech, or the line of Cain, is that Esav's role model. Because when it comes to Esav, especially the reputation that Chazal gave him of being a bloodthirsty murderer and so on, this is very interesting. Why is he imitating Lemach's behavior of all the role models that he could have had? And when finally, even you look at the Rachel and Leah intrigue, that ended up giving us the Yosef and the brother story, which causes the Sinat Chinam, which means this whole story of having more than one spouse has not really worked out all that well for us. In fact, you know, if we wanted to rewrite the book and get rid of all of these other things, it would be a very different book and we would have a very different existence. So I'm saying, realize this is a theme going throughout the book of Bereshit. And here is the first time that we find, at least clearly, we'll get to the unclear soon, this is the first time that we find clearly this description of Lemech goes off, starts a family, takes two wives. Chazal say, one was for this and one was for this. And now when I ask you which is the real wife, I do have to add one more thing to that. So, as you correctly said, what do you mean the real wife? Please define what the real wife is. So it's interesting. If I look at Perek Aleph of Bereshit, what is the purpose of a union? Perek Aleph stresses Pru Urvu. If I look at Perek Bet of Bereshit, there is no description of Pru Urvu. Rather, what does it say when it talks about Adam and Eve? What does it say there? And then it says Vayula Basar Achad, and so on, which means procreation is not the focus. Is not the focus there. It really is something else, which means, you know what I really don't like about the division ultimately? What this division between the two is it turns women into objects in terms of utility. That's ultimately what it does. Which means the corruption over here is objectifying a woman and saying that a woman is to bear children or a woman is to have sexual relations. Which means what is the reality or what should the reality be? A combination. I mean, obviously, should be a combination. So over here, the moral corruption that Rashi is identifying is the objectification of women, looking at them in terms of the utility of what they do for you, and that's something which Lemech has a lot of clarity with. This wife for this, this wife for this. Now the question is, and this is what Charlotte asked a couple of moments ago, the question of this is, does this work? Which means, did it work out the way that Lemech wanted? Because Rashi is very strange, because Rashi says one wife is for this, one wife is for this, and a minute later we see that they both have children. Okay, so hold on for that a second. Yeah.
I just look on it a little bit different. You're looking at the object, making woman an object. Here I feel that Chazal looks on the problem of the man. In other words, it makes the man who is bloodthirsty, the man who is a murderer, the man who has these lustful feelings, this is the same sort of thing. He wants a woman for enjoyment. He wants a woman for procreation. Doesn't mean she also has children. But he and therefore he has two wives. One to fulfill what he thinks he's fulfilling one, and one he wants to fulfill both his abilities.
Absolutely. No, absolutely.
So Lenach is base.
Correct, 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 correct. And now, when I said before that Lemech is the living continuation of Cain, I think that becomes a little bit more focused for us. Again, what we're going to have to come back to is that Lemech's daughter, from which wife? Okay, well, we'll see that. Lemech's daughter is Naama, and that's Eshet Noah. So that's what all this is leading up to, so just to keep that in mind. Well, first of all, I agree with you completely. And when I talked about the trophy wife, I said it was an association, and it's not what it says over here. Secondly, you could easily read these sources differently, but Rashi comes out of the way and tells us this was what Lemuel's thinking of. And what we're, again, Rashi's based on the Midrash. What we're trying to do is understand where Rashi's coming from and what kind of worldview is emerging out of this. Can you read the verses another way? Absolutely. Without any question. You could read differently.
It's very possible that Naamah was possessive to Lotan's sister. Okay,
because
then from a different wife, so he could have married
his half-sister.
Who? Noah.
Yeah. No, it's a different lemma.
So backwards? It doesn't say that Naamah is his daughter. It says that she's somebody's sister. It's like very
Right. So the Midrashim said that they were twins. Some take the approach, and they work together, they did things together. Others take the approach is that this is the first time that a twin didn't marry their brother. That it used to be the twins would marry their brother. Now they no longer marry their brother because there's enough people around. So even though she's the brother of Tubal Cain, but brothers and sisters don't marry, so therefore she married Noah. So again, some of this is a little strange. Look, let's be honest. Why does the Midrash tell us that Naamah is Noah's wife?
She's the only girl in all this laundry list?
Because she's the only unmarried girl that we have. Oh, here we have an unmarried girl. Here we have Noah. He married somebody. So here we have our wonderful theory of conservation of characters, which the Midrash works with all the time. And therefore, it must be, it's obvious, it must be that Naamah, who also the name Naamah has a connotation of being nice and being pleasant, that Naamah, therefore, must be Noah's wife. Okay? Clear. Easy. And that, again, that's what Rashi tells us as well.
They compare the names in the genealogy of Shaykh and the genealogy of Cain, and they're all really similar, and then you get an N, Noah, and you get an N, Naamah.
It could be. No, I'm saying I'm saying that could be as well, but you know the motivation for Chazal on this is really, I'm not going to say it's overwhelmingly compelling, but this is Chazal's either understanding or tradition, and either way, again, let's work with it. Yeah.
The three sons. Yaval, Yuval, and Tubal Cain, something to do with the land. What is the focus there?
So, okay, very, very good. So what we're noticing then is that the names themselves have, there's something to, and the names are also very interesting, very similar.
Right.
What are the names?
Yaval, Yuval, Tubal Cain.
And what are the names all similar to?
Hevel.
The names are all similar to Hevel. Which is, of course, then Tubal Cain becomes something which is both. Now, let's back up a step. Rashi tells us that there's two wives. One wife is there for procreation. Which wife is that? One wife is for which wife is that according to Rashi?
Ada.
Which is very interesting because this is I really should have said it the opposite way. Ada has the connotation of beauty or jewelry, while Tzila could have been more like, sail or shadow. Nonetheless, Rashi tells us that Ada, he shall period with Ya, and Tzila, he shall tashmish. Now you can ask, hold it, if her job is tashmish but not period with Ya, so then there's a couple of possibilities. One is, birth control doesn't always work. Second is, maybe she didn't accept this. Which means, who said that your quote unquote trophy wife will say, yes, I'm happy just to have this relationship. I want a child. And what happens in the next pasuk is that we're told that both wives in fact have children. Now, focus for a moment on Ada. She has a child Yaval and has it right. What is his task? What does he do? Who Yoshev Ohel Mikdam? What does that remind you of?
Yaakov.
What? Okay, Yaakov, what else does it remind you of? Hevel. So I'm saying the name is similar to Hevel, and the behavior is similar to Hevel. You look at the next son, Yuval, which is again something of Hevel, and his task is to make his music. When you put Yuval and Yuval together, it's probably confused everyone, but if you put them together as one person, what emerges? Somebody very similar to David HaMelech emerges. The shepherd musician together, which again does not sound like a very negative thing. So over here we find our Lemech, our Kayin at least in terms of genealogy, we find him having a wife whose purpose is tashmit, periyavirivyah, and the children that emerge from this do not sound all that negative. On the other hand, when you have Tuval Kayin, now Tuval Kayin becomes itself a wonderful name because you have the hevel aspect, or Tuval means to season, right? Tablinin, right? Yeah. So Tuval Kayin, right? Okay, everybody here, whether you don't like anything else I've done with the names, you can't ignore that Kayin is right there, correct? Tuval Kayin is somehow, Kayin is being modified. Kayin is somehow being reworked. Something is taking place over here with Kayin. And what does Tuval Kayin do? He makes iron implements, which yes, which is far more difficult for us, because obviously this could be used on the one hand. It could be used for working the field. What was Kayin's job? Working the field. So here we have somebody who now has developed plows and a greater way of working the field. Or we can now have somebody who's going to be using this for weapons, which is what Kayin ends up doing. So over here we have a clearer aspect of within the two wives of Lemech, we see the hevel child, as it was. When I said earlier that Sheth becomes the replacement for Hevel, it sounds very much to me that this is almost like reparations. This is like the grandchildren of Nazis saying, no, we have to do something in order to try to fix it. They're coming to volunteer on a kibbutz. This is what we see in terms of this first wife. The children are doing the task, the Hevel task in the world, which is why it's more interesting now that we look at the two lines, the two genealogies which are coming down between Perek Dalet and between Perek Hay, and we now realize that these two genealogies are both competing with one another to really do the same thing, and that same thing is somehow to replace the Hevel which is missing from the world. Okay, when we get to the second wife, we're far more disturbed when we read about Tuval Kayin, because all these guys are arming up again. They're doing it even better than before. They have weapons now, and this is the child of Lemech, who now becomes a Kayin-like figure by virtue of killing somebody also. And then he has a sister named Amma. Okay, and now we're back to Amma again, Eshet Noah.
But Tuval Kayin doesn't kill anyone. It's Lemech.
Correct. Selling the guns isn't good either. The Rambam writes that one is not allowed to sell weapons to somebody who would use them. You're not allowed to. They should not take like a great mind to figure this out. But the Rambam uses that as his prototypical example of Lifnei Iver. You sell weapons to somebody who will use them, you will have blood on your hands. You can say, oh no, I'm just I'm just a businessman. Yeah. Yeah.
First off, when the Rashid is teaching us something the whole way, we all have this inner as well. We're all Tuval Kayin. We just have to control what we're going to
do. We're all Tuval Kayin.
Do you know what I mean?
It could be. But what you're getting at is actually part of the where we're going in terms of the next point. Because if Ne'amah is Eshet Noach, this does not take a lot of...
It brings the two lines together.
Which means as much as we like to understand that what the flood comes and does is wipes out all of these terrible people, but Ne'amah is from this line of Kayin. Ne'amah is Eshet Noah, and that's something which we have to consider. Incidentally, there is a whole nother approach to this in Midrashim, which some of the Mefarshim bring, and they totally reject this tradition that this Ne'amah is the wife of Noah. Some of them agree that Noah's wife's name was Ne'amah, but it's a different Ne'amah, it's not this Ne'amah. Because as far as they're concerned, if this Ne'amah is coming through this line that she's coming through, then she must be evil, she must be demonic, she must be terrible. And any of you who've ever heard of any of the legends of someone called Lilith, the Lilith legend has Ne'amah as one of the star characters as well. It's Lilith and Ne'amah who go together to do all kinds of terrible things in this world. In fact, one of the more difficult things that we see as part of the pre-flood story is the description of the Nephilim were Ba'aretz. What did the Nephilim do? What did, okay, this is the, one of the other parts that you skipped when you were in elementary school. I don't know. I'm about to try to find out. Look at Perek Vav, Pasuk Aleph. V'yihi ki hachel ha'adam l'rov ha'pnei ha'adama, uvanot yuldu lahem. Man became populated, daughters were born to him. V'yir'u b'nei ha'elohim et b'nota adam, ki tavotena. The b'nei ha'elohim, this Perek Vav, Pasuk Bet. Who are the b'nei Elohim? So, obviously, there are two possible interpretations. One interpretation is that Elohim here means the sons of the powerful men. Right? The word Elohim is used as a connotation of judges at other points in Torah, and that would be the normative approach. And therefore, in this sense, the way that Chazal put it, Elohim is not Kodesh. The name here is not Kodesh. The name is means the sons of the powerful men. Okay? And we discussed that last year, if any of you remember. I discussed that last year. We can't revisit that. People are too disturbed. They're still going through therapy to try to get past that.
Right here it says.
One second. Before you read that, I know. 1 second. So one. Of course I do. I know what's written. One approach is that it is the sons of powerful men. But let's continue to the end of the pasuk. Vayikhu lehem nashim nikol esher bacharu. They took all of these girls who they chose. And then in Pasuk Dalet it writes, "Hanefilim hayu ba'aretz b'imim ha'hem." Now, if you look at any of your English translations for the word Nephilim, yours would probably write Nephilim, right? It won't even won't translate it. The Nephilim were there. Who were the Nephilim? The Nephilim, of course. So that's obvious.
The fallen ones.
Not far from the word to fall. There is a whole midrashic approach that Nephilim are fallen angels, and the midrashic background for this is that if you remember the whole discussion. Not that you were that old, and remember, we're there at the time. Remember the Midrashim discussing before creation, God says to the angels, "Shall I create man?" And angels saying, "Don't create man." And in fact, the way that it is in the Gemara, the way the Gemara tells it, comes to the first group of angels that shall create man, and God says, and the angels say no, so God takes them and destroys them. Comes to the second group of angels, make man, and they say no, God takes them and destroys them. Comes to the third group of angels, and they say, "Shall I make man?" He goes, "Listen, we don't like what you did to the first two." So I guess the right answer to this question was yes, go ahead, make man. But that's till the angels see that man is sinning. When they see all the terrible sins that man does, the angels then say to God, "Okay, you know, we didn't say anything to you, we went with you on this, because we sort of thought that we didn't have much of a choice, but this is not working out all that well. I mean, man is not doing that well." So God then says to the angels, "You think it's easy being a man?" And says, "Why don't you go down and see what it's like a little bit?" So those are the Nephilim, according to the Midrash. The Nephilim come down, and who do they meet? They meet Na'amah. They meet Na'amah, who seduces them, and these angels then become fallen angels. So Na'amah then becomes this prototypical seductress who not only can destroy men, even up to this generation, because she's this some kind of a she-demon, she's the ones who defrocked the angels. Okay? So, that's this... What's the matter?
How can you tell this book is written by now?
No. How can you tell this class is being given by now?
Okay, I have a question right here. It says that...
Go ahead.
Okay. I've killed, according to tradition, Enoch had just killed Cain and Tubal Cain, okay? That means he killed his own son, Tubal Cain. And this would have killed the whole line, and that obliterated the whole line of Cain.
But Na'amah. Na'amah is still around. So as I said, Na'amah becomes a far more interesting character because there are two very different approaches on who Na'amah is. Is Na'amah a tzaddikah married to Noah? Or is Na'amah this terrible demon? Now, again, I think the background of the question comes down, is the line of Cain redeemable? Or is the line of Cain not redeemable? Because if my approach is that if someone's coming from Cain, you just can't redeem that, so she then becomes the cause of all of the problems which are described in this thing of the B'nai Elohim and the Nephilim are there running amok, and therefore God has to bring the flood to get rid of all of these things. On the other hand, if Naamah marries Noah, then quite the opposite, that she enters the ark and she's part of the salvation instead of being part of the problem. She's part of the solution. So that those are two very, very different approaches to it. But then the question, again, I think that the question becomes a very simple one. The question is, ultimately, is the line of Cain a redeemable line, or is it not a redeemable line? So let's just go through this a little bit more, because what we have... Yeah.
You said it's about Cain as some sort of combination of Hevel and Cain. Now we just said that he made weapons and he wasn't lying. So how is he accounted in Hevel?
Weapons can be used.
Weapons
can be used in different ways. But I said you have to note that the Tuval has at least part of the Hevel within it. But the Cain is clearly
the
there. Right, right. There are those who say that Naamah made the weapons with him. I think I mentioned that before. And again, there are all kinds of different approaches to this. Okay, let's think again now. Cain works the ground. Hevel is a shepherd. Lamech chooses two wives. Rashi and Chazal don't seem to like the idea all that much. And Rashi identifies this as one of the causes for the flood. What exactly is the problem? We're not sure. But to what extent is this a part of the behavior, which is then described as the Nephilim or the B'nai Elohim, taking these girls? It does very much sound like these people are not interested in the family relationship, but are interested in a very different type of relationship, and that is part of what is destroyed over here. So the behavior of Lamech seems, again, according to Rashi, to be the prototype for what is going to be happening a little bit later on in the parak, and that is the background for destruction. Even though, according to Rashi, interestingly enough, the final destruction takes place because of Gezel. And here Rashi is following an approach which is identified in the Rishalmi. They were guilty of all of these things, but it was the thievery that actually brought the whole thing down. The Ibn Ezra doesn't agree. The Ibn Ezra says the thievery was the thievery of the wives. People would steal other people's wives, and therefore he understands that the Hamas, in association with what was said before. And when one reads the whole section, the Ibn Ezra's interpretation, I think, is a bit more compelling. One thing which strikes me now, when we do get to Noah goes on the ark, as we started to note in the very beginning. He goes on with his sons, and his wife goes on with the daughters-in-law. And Rashi there says, because there was no Tashmish. So here's the daughter of the woman who was there for Tashmish, even though she herself perhaps rebelled from that role and ended up becoming a mother. She wasn't happy not having children. And even though, again, you want to say this male-oriented approach, tried to put her into this role, she did not accept that role. To what extent her own daughter rebels from where she's brought up or the type of world that she's brought up in is a very interesting question. But again, her mother's role was to be there for Tashmish. Now she goes onto the ark with Noah, and there is no Tashmish. What's also interesting is...
Because Naamah was
Sibyl's
daughter, huh?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
No,
it's not. I said that. I said despite the name. That despite the name. Don't try to confuse me like this.
No.
So then you also have to note another thing. When they get onto the ark, what does it say? Two by two. And that now, reverberates a little bit more. The animals, two by two, it's as if saying, this is the way the thing's supposed to be. Because he easily could have said, listen, you want to bring animals? Bring six of these, four of these, five. No, bring two by two, as if to tell me that even within the animal world, there's supposed to be monogamy, even though, that's something. And by the way, that is absolutely part of the Chazal's understanding at the end in terms of the different birds that we talked about, Givat Zev, last year on Shabbat Noah. In terms of the Yonah versus the Orev, in terms of its approach towards monogamy. Okay, leave that for a moment. When Noah gets on the ark, what is his role? His role is the shepherd role. Why do I say that? Because he's taking care of the animals. But it's very interesting what happens to Noah when he gets off the ark.
becomes a farmer. He now
becomes the farmer. And that doesn't work out that well for him. So it's very interesting that when Noah is following the Hevel mode, that's where salvation comes from. When Noah shifts into the Cain role, that's where destruction comes from. Do you all see that clearly? Also, when we now look at the behavior of Ham, the son of Noah, who does some kind of an outrage to his father, and then he is cursed and his son is cursed, Canaan, right, Ham. There is something interesting about Ham and about Canaan. And we've noted this before. If you go through all of Sefer Bereishit and find all the men that don't behave properly, all of them come from this line. Be it Paro grabbing Sarah, be it Avimelech grabbing Sarah or Rivka, be it the people of Stone, go through all of the people that don't behave properly, you'll find all of them coming through this line, and now you can't help but ask yourself, does Ham take after his mother more, or does he take after his father more, or does he take care? Is he really a follower of the line of Cain, or is he really a follower of the line of Hevel? Which means even though the flood gets rid of, again, what we would think gets rid of everything, and even though Chazal may want to say, no, Na'amah becomes a demon, and so on, if you were to ask me, you know, again, I'm afraid to say that what I'm saying now is pshat, but I don't think it's that far from pshat. When you see the behavior of Ham and Canaan, and then all the people that come afterwards, that is the same behavior as the pre-flood generation. And if Chazal now come and identify that Noah's wife was Na'amah, and she may absolutely have been a tzaddikah who moves away from the role, perhaps, which she was brought up within, you know, witnessing, and she breaks that kind of a cycle, nonetheless, I do have to question, in terms of her children, if, you know, what exactly happened. Which means, again, if you ask me where Ham is coming from, Ham sounds like my continuation of my Kayan line is still around. Look, Sadduk HaKohen from Lublin is very, very clear on this. He writes in the Pre-Tzadik Parshat Vayelech Shabbat Tshuva. Okay, so realize here he's talking about Tshuva. V'chein matzinu v'kayin shebemet ho'el tshuvato. That Kayin, ultimately, his Tshuva worked. How do I know? De'it de'na'ama yishto shenoach hayta. That the fact that Cain will have a descendant like Noah, the Yatsami Menu Kol HaOlam, the Avram Avinu HaLotam HaShalom, the Chol Uma Yisraelit, we, all of us, now we'll go back to your point, we, all of us, have a bit of Cain within us. And he's saying, but Cain is redeemable. That's what he's saying. That Cain is redeemable, and even the worst crimes have an ability to be redeemed. And that's what he said. This is where Tzadik HaKohen from Lublin is saying on Shabbat Tshuva, I don't care what you've done, I don't care how you've done it, I don't care where you're coming from. Yeah, that everybody has a Jews. From their mother's side. He goes, he's taking this approach that Na'amah is the wife of Noah. If Na'amah is the wife of Noah, yes, we're all from Shait on our father's side, and we're all from
Ne'amah. We come from shame.
Same mother.
I know, but
if that makes you feel better, fine. But agreed. What I was trying to show in terms of Ham is that it definitely manifests itself more. And you see that the Ham personality is much more of what you described earlier as the baser personality, the person who can't control themselves. And even the word Ham, somebody who gets all heated up and so on. That the name actually, I think, is significant over here. But when you follow it through, it seems to me that we, again, this is what Rav Tzadok is saying. He's not willing to take, and he knows all the Midrashic sources, he knows the Zohar, and he quotes it all the time. Rav Tzadok over here is deliberately ignoring the approach of the Zohar that turns Na'amah into this kind of a demon. He said quite the opposite. He goes, what's really going on over here is that, yes, Na'amah is from Cain. How could Cain have produced a Na'amah who becomes Eshet Noach? And he has a very simple answer for this. Cain did tshuva. Cain really had remorse. Cain really felt bad. Now, yeah.
You have the same type of thing with Ruth.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
She absorbed all the chesed and lost in the whole.
Correct. Correct.
No, it comes in the line of the Rivka, and we have that in mind, you know, the whole family that they came from.
Correct, correct.
But it does come from the mother's line.
Yeah, so I'm saying it could, you know, it could be that Al, before we started today, it could be that Al feeling is, oh, Cain is this terrible guy, but you know, Hevel was good, okay, Hevel's gone, so we have Shait, we're from Shait, we're okay. Chazal don't seem to be saying that. Chazal seem to be saying, as you said before, that's what I said, I agree with it, I just wanted to get there, is that we do have a bit of Cain within us, but that Cain within us is redeemable, and ultimately, again, the Tzaddik is very clear, Avram Avinu comes, is a descendant of Shait, but also from Cain. And that's the result of being from Lemech. And that's the result of being from this Na'aman.
There's a little note here. It says, tradition says that Noach married his niece from Zarah, daughter of Rachel.
There are other traditions. No, there are other traditions. Because, as I said, some people don't like this whole Na'aman person. It's okay, so they would be married. Some say another Na'aman, and there's another person, they married somebody else. Now, if we've already identified this you know, particular tension, Rashi actually identified this exact theme at the very beginning of the Cain and the Hevel story. I don't know if you've ever noticed this or ever went through this particular Rashi. When you get to the beginning of Perek Daled, V'hadam yada et chava ishto, v'tahar v'telet et Cain. Adam was intimate with Chava, his wife, and they had a child, Cain. But Tamar kaniti ishet Hashem. I've acquired a man from God, which really sounds like she's acquired a relationship with God. But Tosef laledet, and she continued to give birth, et achiv, et havel. She continued to give birth to his brother, to Hevel. Vehi hevel reotzon, v'kaim eya oved adama. The beginning of this verse, the Tosef laledet et achiv et havel, is a little havel is a little difficult. Was it should have written the Tosef laledet et achiv havel? That's what it should have said. Rashi is bothered by these too many ets, right? Also in the first pasuk, v'tar v'teilet et kain. It should have been time v'teilet. Then, of course, we'll find without it, kain. But it's together, et kain. And afterwards, over here by Hevel, it's the Tosef laledet et achiv et Hevel. Rashi on Pasuk Aleph, because when you look for it, you're not going to find it. Trying to solve it. Change your mind right here. The Rashi writes in Pasuk Aleph, et kain et achiv et Hevel. By the way, notice Rashi is explaining both Pasuk Aleph and Bet in Pasuk Aleph. He writes, Gimel Etim. There are three Ets over here. If Et is plural. Gimel Etim. There are three times it says the word Et. Ribuyim Heim. They're not necessary. They're extra. Melameid, Shetu Ama Nolda Im Kayin. That Kayin was born with one twin sister. Then Hevel Noldu Shtayim. And Hevel was born with two twin sisters. Lakach Nemar Batosif. And therefore it uses the word Tosif. Now, you know, when you read this, it's just a very... Okay, it says the word Et. I just want to suggest something. Again, this is all on a midrashic level. That Cain was born with one sister, who then, Chazal is very clear about this, becomes his wife. Hevel is born with two.
So two.
What? So therefore, Hevel is supposed to have two wives. This, according to Chazal, is the beginning of the problem between Cain and Hevel. Which means Cain's jealousy of Hevel was because he says the world isn't fair. It's not fair. Why does he get two and I only get one? Yeah, this is what Rashi's trying to tell us. Again, we have to learn to read between the lines. This is what Rashi's telling us. Before we get to anything else, before one's gift is accepted, the other gift isn't accepted, here at the very outset, Rashi's telling that something happened at birth already, that Cain is looking and saying the world isn't fair. The world isn't fair, why does he get two and I only get one? But now it becomes very interesting, because again, we don't know what that relationship would have been between Hevel and these girls. Again, if we take this Rashi literally, we don't know what that relationship would have been. But it's so interesting now that Lemech, who becomes the replacement for Cain, also in terms of the naming of his children and their becoming shepherds, seems also trying to relive the life of Hevel but I think through the through a kind perspective. Did that work, what I just now said? I can't, no. It seems that this Lemech is trying to do what I would call a tikkun. He's trying to fix something, but his approach of meaning... because he's fixating.
Hevel, you want to think is pure and nice and good, and you know, well, this is what I got. So Baruch Hashem, this is what I got.
Right.
As opposed to
right.
Lemech, who's like, no, this is what I want. I'm owed it.
So therefore, correct. So therefore, what you see is you see that Lemech's taking of the two wives is an attempt at mimicking his perception of what Hevel would have been like. But again, it's the perception from very much of a kind. Of a kind perspective.
He's a replacement for Hevel.
He names his children Yuval and Yuval, and they become. I think that this becomes really clear that he is.
He's got a Hevel fixation.
He does have a Hevel fixation. No, he's
not that he wants to be. That he's a continuation of kind.
Of course, he's a continuation because ultimately he ends up spilling blood. Ultimately, he ends up wandering. Ultimately, he becomes very much like Cain because that's what I'm saying. That deep inside him, what he is the continuation of Cain.
Yeah.
But again, his relationship with these two, again, everything I'm saying now is according to what we've seen in Rashi. Again, understanding the Midrashim, and you know whether you want to take these two wives over here literally or metaphorically, it makes no difference to me. But this sounds to me to be the beginning of what we then see later on in terms of Lemech taking two wives, because that's where the two wives actually comes to fruition in a very real way. This tension between being the shepherd or being the farmer, and let's also realize how far back this goes. Back in the Garden of Eden, when man didn't have to work, Adam hung out with the animals. That's what it says. Right? And the curse of man is to have to work the field. Which means when Noah then is told, okay, take the animals two by two and so on, that goes back to the way that Hevel behaves. That goes back to Adam HaRishon. While the Cain approach is the approach of after the curse, after the destruction, after the Galut. And it's so interesting then. I mean, Noah ultimately, I mean, I didn't make any fun of Noah today. I've written terrible things about Noah, people are mad at me. But Noah ultimately fails. Because Noah, again, and at his great part, Noah is there with the animals in this like Adam kind of role and in this Hevel kind of role. But something goes wrong afterwards. And, you know, the last scene that we have of Noah is him rolling around naked on the floor, you know, absolutely humiliating him, you know, himself, making a fool of himself. And that's something which is really, really quite frustrating. Ultimately, the Noah experiment fails. Ultimately, Noah doesn't work. But these lines, the Cain versus the Hevel, and please, I hope that we all appreciate, we're not dealing exclusively with an issue of genealogy. That it goes beyond that. What we're dealing with is one of behavior, and that's why the words of Tzaddik really were so encouraging. I also want to point out that, and then they said, notice around 12:30 last night, where nothing is clear anymore, but when I looked up at the pasuk about Eshet Ne'urim, the wife of your youth, from Kiki Isha Azuva Batsuva Ruach Karach Hashem, the Isha Lurim Kita Ma'is Amar Lokaya, this idea of this wife of your youth who's being, and again, I admitted when I went into this that this really may be a side point, but let me bring it right back into the discussion and to the conclusion, because this is the Haftorah that we read on Parshat Noah. Okay? And sing, O barren, you who did not bear, break forth and sing, Rania Kara. Right? Meaning, this woman, now you go into the psyche of this quote unquote trophy wife who is barren, who doesn't have a child, ultimately she does not find that all that satisfying. And over here, the wife of your youth who has been rejected, that seemed to be an outrage. Two psukim later, after it talks, ki isha, azuva, batuva, and so on, as a woman who's been rejected, it says right afterwards, ki me noach zot. This is like the waters of Noah. This is, and that's why it was chosen for the Haftorah. Ki me noach zot li asher nishbati mevarmei. Meaning, I'm not going to bring about a destruction of the waters of Noah again, but this is the background for the waters of Noah, which means the family relationship which falls apart. I mean, ultimately, it seems to me that the mistake of Lemech and the perception of Cain is this objectification of women and seeing them in terms of their utility. and saying, okay, this is the one who's going to bring the children, this is the one who I'm going to have a good time with. And ultimately, the beauty of this wife of their youth is the one that a person discovers the pleasures of intimacy with, and is the one that somebody raises children with. And ultimately, the full wife should be a full partner. And that's what the Navi over here is identifying, that you've left this wife of your youth. Like, where are you going and what are you doing? And that really becomes a metaphor of Jews leaving God as well. That this is really the ultimate relationship. And within this context, to bring in a discussion of the waters of Noah, I think that this confirms at least Yeshayahu's understanding that this really is the background. And therefore, the whole story of Lemach, just in case any of you think that I spent far too much time in Bereishit and didn't talk about Parashat Noah, this is the introduction of Noah. This is the problem. This is what Rashi told us is the corruption that's taking place. And part of it is the objectification. Part of it is the existence of the Cain approach in the world. Even when Cain tries to imitate Hevel or see the world through Hevel's eyes, now whether that fails or succeeds, I don't know. Ultimately, we're told that even someone like Cain could have done tshuva, and ultimately we're told that the world is continued through Ne'amah. And over there, we see that Noah has three sons, Shem and Yefet. Those become very interesting characters in terms of the future of the world and the interaction of Shem and Yefet. As far as Ham, so, okay, listen, I don't know if these are great percentages, if you bring three kids and one that doesn't work out, but it is interesting how much Ham is the continuation of the Cain line, which follows through in terms of Ne'amah.
Could you address, if I've lost a mark here, you'll tell me, why is agriculture perceived as a negative, where the shepherd and the
tending
of animals is perceived as a positive?
I think what we have to keep in mind, because obviously it's not really a negative, right?
Civilization depends upon it.
But
it's connected to Adam's sin.
It's connected to Adam's sin. It's okay, to remember that this is the result of sin, okay. Is the toil, and the real existence should have been living in the Garden of Eden, okay. And not have to.
But wasn't when in Gan Eden, wasn't Adam told that he was put there?
Ovda with the Shemra.
Yeah.
Right. But Ovda is understood that he did. Again, if the working of the land is only after the curse, so Ovda v'Shemra becomes something very, very different. Ovda v'Shemra does not physically mean having to work the ground. It means being creative and working with society, building something, but it doesn't mean actually having to work the ground. Which is why the Ibn Ezra becomes more interesting when he combines the Gezel together with the other point. Okay, everyone have a wonderful Shabbat. Hope you have something to say on the Shabbat table, that there's something out of all this you can say.
Did you guys see the rainbow this week?
Yes.